Grand Banks Grand Opera. The airport for Goose Bay Happy Valley was the aviation hub for Labrador and the Inuit region of Nunatsiavut, with its scattered coastal villages. As always in the north, the weather was the ultimate arbitrator of arrivals and departures. And even though sophisticated radar made it possible to land the largest passenger aircraft under extreme conditions, neither Jumbo Jet or Piper Cub could count on taking off when fog shrouded Goose Bay's two extra-long runways. Along with three colleagues from the Newfoundland Symphony Orchestra, I had flown the previous night to Goose Bay from Wabash on the Quebec border. We were on a tightly booked school concert tour and were headed to the outports, those tiny isolated villages along the coast of Labrador, most of which were accessible only by air. Our chartered plane was supposed to leave at first sunlight, but relentless fog swirled around the airport as we arrived. Obviously, nobody was flying anywhere. The tarmac outside the terminal building was jammed with aircraft of all sizes. There was an Air Canada 737, four de Havilland Beavers, one Grumman Goose on wheels, two DC-3 freighters, half a dozen private Cessna 182s, and three Piper Navajos, one of which was our charter aircraft for the day. Inside the terminal, 84 stranded passengers milled around aimlessly from airline counter to coffee shop, from coffee shop to restrooms, from restrooms to payphones, from payphones to the viewing lounge. Some viewing lounge. They could barely see their parked aircraft, let alone the panorama of Happy Valley. The fog thickened, and predictably, the message from the control tower remained unchanged. The ceiling is too low for takeoff. The tiny coffee shop ran out of donuts and coffee. The restrooms ran out of toilet paper. The waiting passengers ran out of small change for the airport's three overworked payphones. Airline staff ran out of patience, answering the same repeated questions, and announcements of one delay after another echoed through the cavernous converted hangar. Our instrument cases were suddenly noticed. "Play us a tune," someone urged. A little music would presumably be more cheerful than endless announcements of delayed flights. Why not an impromptu concert? At least we would have a captive audience. We cleared a space in front of the solitary car rental counter, found four armless chairs in the now empty coffee shop, unfolded our portable music stands, tuned up as best we could, and began to perform. Now, this was no ordinary ensemble. It consisted of an accordion, a violin, a clarinet, and a bassoon. The music included a Mozart serenade, a Strauss waltz, an aria from one of Verdi's operas, the Carnival of Venice, music from the Pink Panther, and even our guaranteed crowd-pleaser finale, a snappy version of the theme song from The Simpsons. All of it had to be especially arranged for our peculiar instrumental combination. The restless crowd gathered around, no longer quite so restless. Some sat on the floor, some used their suitcases as chairs. As far as I recall, there was no noticeable complaint about faulty intonation as we played our entire school concert repertoire. Halfway through the concert, La Donna Mobile from the opera Rigoletto was interrupted by an announcement of a further delay of Eastern Provincial's Flight 181. an airport commissioner rushed hastily to the tower to invite the air traffic controllers to join the audience. I'm not sure if they actually came, but at least the PA system remained silent after that for the rest of our concert. We finished playing, and I took my place in the line at the payphone. I had held on to one last remaining dime. Yes, this tale has just been dated. And I called through to the school where we thought we were going. Of course they knew about the fog, if not by phone, by instinct. "Don't worry," they told me, "you'll play whenever you get here." Meantime, some of our morning audience had strayed back to the viewing lounge. It seemed a little brighter outside the terminal building. Was that the power of music? Perhaps the fog was really lifting. Suddenly a voice exclaimed excitedly, "It's clearing! We can see the runway!" At that moment our pilot came dashing down the corridor. "We're cleared to go," he shouted. "Grab your gear. If we can take off in the next 10 minutes, we'll be on our way." Passengers on the larger commercial flights looked on enviously. We ran and followed the pilot onto the tarmac. "Where are we going?" I shouted over the din of the Navajo's twin motors, already whirling at takeoff speed. "I don't know yet," the pilot shouted back. "We'll get off the ground and then we'll find out what's open." And that is precisely what happened. At 3,500 feet, the sun was shining and the town of Goose Bay lay under a thick blanket of snowy alto cumulus. It was 10:40 in the morning. Our pilot turned his craft due east, more or less towards Greenland, and was on the radio to nearby airports. After a few minutes, he raised his thumbs in a sign of victory. "Black Tickle is open. Let's start there." He radioed ahead and sent a message to the school. "On the ground at 11:35. Pick us up. Delay lunch. Over and out." We were 3 hours late, but at least we would be able to rescue the first of the three concerts scheduled for that day. The tiny village of Black Tickle, population 220, is about as far out in the Atlantic Ocean as one can possibly travel and still remain in Canada. Located on the island of Ponds off the coast of mainland Labrador, the community is subjected to fierce Atlantic storms as well as endless banks of fog from the nearby Grand Banks. The village is nearer to Quanac, Greenland, than it is to Ottawa. According to Google Maps, it takes approximately 2 days and 15 hours to reach either. As the crow flies, and as we flew that day, from Goose Bay, it was 270 kilometers. We landed beneath an ominously low ceiling. A school bus drew up alongside the plane as the motors were stilled. In 20 minutes, we were in the school, set up and ready to play. All 22 students, grades 1 to 12, were there that day, and a sizable number of the town's adult population joined us. It was a full house, or more accurately, a full activity room. As we played, our pilot stood at the back of the room. Every few minutes, he disappeared to the principal's office to check the weather conditions. But in fact, he didn't need the telephone. He could see the cold front moving in. We were in the middle of a slow waltz-like section when he started waving his arms furiously, gesturing first to the door, then to his watch, then helplessly at the approaching clouds. As we came to an early stop, he preempted the balance of the concert. "Sorry, folks," he called out. "If we don't get off the ground in the next 20 minutes, you'll have house guests for a week." The teachers nodded sympathetically, helped us dismantle our music stands, thrust a huge bag of sandwiches into our hands, and piled us back into the school bus. 15 minutes later, we were airborne. The fog buried Black Tickle 5 minutes after we left. The ocean surrounding the island of Ponds was no longer visible. All we could see, emerging magically from the clouds, was the gleaming, translucent peak of an offshore iceberg, frozen in the very sea that had created it. As we climbed above Black Tickle, the sun shone an incredible brilliant hue above the cloud blanket. We turned towards Cartwright, a mere 70 kilometers inland, but in minutes our pilot reported that the airport there was socked in. "We have just enough fuel to make it to Rigolet," he paused, then added, "With luck, they'll have fuel there for the trip home." We lunched on black tickle sandwiches. As we were landing, we could see the school bus waiting for us. It crossed our mind that by this time, given that our pilot had contacted at least 8 airports and schools, on every remote airstrip in Labrador, a school bus was standing by in case we turned up at that particular village for our promised concert. And so, at the Rigolette School, we once again played our repertoire, this time complete and without operatic interruption. Our pilot, meantime, successfully found enough aviation fuel for the Navajo's twin tanks. And when the school bus brought us back, we all breathed a collective sigh of relief that the Rigolette airfield had remained open for our final takeoff of the day. That night, back in Goose Bay, we contemplated whether we could reschedule Cartwright on the next day as our charter headed to Nain and Natuashish. Meantime, I wrote my report to the funding agencies. I described the day as best I could and concluded that they could take great satisfaction in the fulfillment of most of the program. Despite the most daunting weather, we had successfully played 2 out of our 3 scheduled concerts, a justly proud pronouncement. But in the end, we had one that was even better. Who else in the world could possibly claim to have played Rigoletto in Rigolette?